This is going to go for a while tonight. Dig in. Prepare yourselves. It's not going to be over quickly. I've got a lot of things to show you that I need to put in your head because I want to leave here. And when I leave here tonight, I want to leave you with whatever you think of me being totally irrelevant. I want the facts that I present to you to be the most important thing that stays with you tonight. And I will tell you honestly that I am here to scare the shit out of you, and I'm going to do it. I have been around for 24 years, A Voice Crying in the Wilderness. That's where I got the name for my newsletter. Since I first, as an L.A. policeman, a young L.A. policeman, observed CIA dealing drugs with my own eyeballs and spoke out about it and lost my career, I have spent probably 15, 20 of those years out of the 24 encountering people who were on the left, who were activists, or I call them Volvo Democrats, who, when I would tell them that I personally witnessed CIA dealing drugs and I got shot at for it, would have them come back to me and say things like, well, you couldn't have possibly been shot at because Noam Chomsky says they don't do that. The point that I'm trying to make is the minute you idolize any individual personality, you have lost the battle. I'm a teacher. I'm a messenger. I give you a map. What you do with it is your responsibility. I have encountered too many people in the years. In 1996, I took on CIA Director John Deutsch at a world televised public appearance, his Custer's last stand at Locke High School in South Central Los Angeles after the Gary Webb stories had broken huge about CIA's involvement in the cocaine trade, and I made him look like an absolute idiot. And the way that I did that was not because I'm so wonderful. Maybe it was just because I was pissed off enough to look him right in the eye, but because I had facts, because I had evidence in my hands. It wasn't in my hands, but I had documents, and he knew I had them. I had names of operations, and I turned him into a hand-wringing, sniveling bureaucrat who on world television, and with Ted Koppel watching, said, well, you should take your information and report it to the Los Angeles Police Department. And I've had an interesting learning experience with activism, and I feel at home in this room tonight because I know that most of you are longtime activists. Most of you have been around the block before. And I didn't come from that milieu. I am results-oriented. And ever in American history, if ever in the history of activism, I want to leave you tonight with the message that your lives and your liberty are on the line now. There is no more opportunity for armchair discussion. There is no more time to sit back and say, I'll do this as long as it's comfortable. And I'll leave you with that conviction before I go. But I have seen activists say, wow, we had a really successful event. We had 500 people. We had 1,000 people. And success for us can no longer be measured by the number of people we turn out in the room to have feel good when they leave about something. Our success can only be measured by the results that we produce in the world in which we live. Period. The philosophy with which I started publishing From the Wilderness 4 years ago, and we will have our fourth birthday at the end of this month, was very simple. I don't publish anything that I can't document. I don't ask you to take anything that I write on faith. I will offer opinions, and I'll tell you their opinions. I'll give you my analysis. But I don't make any assertions unless I tell you where I got the information so that you can go find it for yourself. And I have taken on some very big names. In 4 years. I won't go through the litany. I have never been sued because truth is an absolute defense against libel. Absolutely. All the time. So I'm going to present to you evidence tonight. I'm going to show you these documents. We have to start, unfortunately, because when the media tries to challenge me sometimes, they say things like, he was never a policeman. He never worked narcotics. So I've got to do that as a preliminary. Any FBI agents in the audience tonight? Okay. First of all, how I got into this mess, unfortunately, was not because I was an L.A. policeman. What I know is not because I was a cop. This is not something every policeman knows. The CIA routinely places case officers and contract assets inside major police departments all over the country. I had the misfortune of being born into a family where everybody was a spy. My mother was a cryptographer for the Army Security Agency during the Second World War. She worked for Secretary of State Cordell Hull. She worked on the Japanese codes and the Russian codes. Yes, we knew the Japanese were going to bomb Pearl Harbor, and yes, we allowed it to happen. If you don't believe me on that, go to the website for the History Channel. Get their Secrets of World War II video on Pearl Harbor. Now, there's a very lame description in the box, but if you watch the video, it's been aired four times this year, they talk to the naval officers who said, yeah, we had the codes broken. They show some documents showing that the codes had been broken, and the reason why the U.S. government let that attack happen was because the American people didn't want to go into World War II. Anybody ever wonder why five aircraft carriers were not in Pearl Harbor? Gee, what a coincidence. Anyway, that was Mom. My dad had been an Air Force officer. He went to work for Martin Marietta on the Titan IIIC, which put up all of the CIA's keyhole spy satellites. He was the liaison between the Air Force and Martin. Dad's relatives were OSS, that's the forerunner of CIA, and they spent a career at CIA at Langley, Virginia. I was an only child born in Washington, D.C., and I used to come home from school and say, what's for dinner? And Mom would say, I can't tell you. So for all the skeptics in the room who don't, you know, who may not believe that I worked LAPD, there's one of my rating reports that shows that I specialized in narcotics, especially in the field of narcotics enforcement and investigative procedures, numerous quality arrests. I was loaned to detectives. That's the outstanding box over there. I was absolutely the perfect blue suit, bleeding LAPD blue guy because I wanted to believe, and I did believe until I saw that CIA was dealing drugs, and I couldn't. Denial is not a river in Egypt, and I couldn't go there once I had seen it. Now, when I confronted John Deutsch, I was pulled off of Nightline with Ted Koppel, a live interview, because the ranking member of LAPD, Deputy Chief Mark Croker, who was now the Chief of Police in Portland, they loved it when I did that, said I had never worked narcotics. So when I went to Portland, I showed him this certificate, which shows that I was sent to a DEA enforcement school by LAPD. You don't get sent to that if your specialty is writing parking tickets. So, okay, you all agree I was a cop and I worked narcotics. Fine, let's move on. But I do this because I want to be thorough. What I'm doing tonight is I'm presenting to you exactly the same way that I would present if I were a detective talking to a district attorney or if I were an attorney talking to a grand jury. I'm presenting a case with the evidence. I will not speculate. There's a lot of things we're not going to talk about tonight which can't be proven. Were there explosives in the building? Were the airplanes flown by remote control? All these cul-de-sacs that you can't go into that I can't produce proof for, I don't care. They're irrelevant. My job is to reach the people out there who haven't been reached with those facts that shake the foundation of their belief that they're the fundamentally most blessed people on the planet, enjoying a standard of living because God loves Americans above all other peoples in the world, which is what George Bush sells. I have to shake their belief in the system. You don't do that with speculation. Now, there's some things that I have to tell you before we start talking about September the 11th. If you don't understand these things, you will never understand completely why September the 11th happened. One is drugs and the other is oil. I'm going to lay some foundation for you here. Now, how many people in the room think that CIA deals drugs? We've come a long way, baby. Yes, it's true, they do. But I'm going to show you some things about proof and put this in the context of the fact that for 38 years, we have had a motion picture, the Zapruder film, showing that John Kennedy was shot from the front. Now, what has that produced? And I'm not holding the government responsible, I'm holding you responsible. You as representatives of the American people. We have had evidence of crime after crime after crime in our history, yet the American people have never, ever once demanded a full accounting because the way America operates is like a family wherein the father is molesting the youngest child, the daughter, And the rest of the family members maintain silence because they're afraid of being singled out themselves or afraid of losing the image of the family. So I deal in proof. Now, let me give you a little history. CIA tried to recruit me twice. First, officially, when I was a senior at UCLA in 1973. I was magna cum laude and, you know, all this other good stuff. And they flew me back to Washington. They said, Mike, you're in great shape. You're a Republican. You've interned for LAPD Chief Davis. You have a Q clearance because of your family. Blah, blah, blah. We want you to be a case officer and we'll put you undercover at CIA, at LAPD. And I said no, because it was illegal. I didn't send the documents back. And I joined LAPD, hit the streets in South Central, specialized in narcotics. And they tried to recruit me again. I walked into my regular bar one night, and there was a very beautiful woman sitting right next to my regular bar stool. And her name was Teddy, and she was a career contract agent with CIA. And I'll tell you that that recruitment pitch was a little different from the one I got in Washington. We fell in love, got engaged, and I began to see that she was very much, she knew high-ranking people in LAPD, she knew generals in the Army, she knew mafiosi, she knew all kinds of people, Carlos Marcello in New Orleans, and she would go to Hawaii, come back and say, I was in a room with 50 kilos of coke and 1,000 M16s, and I would say to her, gee, I know you want me to go to work for you, but if I'm ever in a room with 50 kilos of coke, somebody's going to jail and it's not going to be me. There I go being rational again. That was in 1976. I ultimately saw her in New Orleans in 1977 with night vision devices, scrambler phones, getting sealed communiques from Naval and Air Force non-commissioned officers from Belchase Naval Air Station as huge quantities of heroin were being brought in off of oil rigs in the Gulf and large quantities of guns were being loaded onto ships owned by a company called Brown & Root, which is today a subsidiary of Halliburton, which was chaired by our Vice President, Dick Cheney, until the Bush administration took office. So in that context, we're going to build to tell you why the CIA deals drugs. All of you are obviously convinced that they do, but you have to understand why, because that's a big part of Afghanistan. But let's look at some of the evidence. The government loves to cover their trail. In 1981, when the Reagan administration was new, Iran-Contra was just about to begin. They knew that. Cocaine consumption in the United States was somewhere around 79, 80 metric tons a year. By 1987, at the peak of the Contra war, it was 600 metric tons a year. That was planned. It was orchestrated. And the U.S. government knew that that was going to happen, and they had to prepare for it. If you're in the U.S. government, in the executive branch, and somebody working under you commits a crime, there is a law in Title 18 U.S. Code that says you have to turn in your employees if they're committing crimes. You have to call the Justice Department, you have to call the FBI, and report the criminal activity. Well, they knew that. It's a law. And these guys love to cover their tails. So they had a two-stage negotiation. In this negotiation, which was between William French Smith, which you can barely read down here. That's the Reagan's first attorney general. But you can read, boy, there's an oxymoron, the Honorable William J. Casey, Director of Central Intelligence. In the first stage of the negotiation, they said, first of all, you have to report employees who deal drugs. So from now on, everybody who's not a case officer, meaning the career contract agents, career agents, foreign assets, informants, the CIA runs a number of proprietary companies. I was talking to someone like about Pacific Corp, which is related to Pacific Holding, which is related to Pacific Gas and Electric, heavy CIA connections. But all the CIA proprietary employees, all the employees that they hire and for, all of those people are not employees. That's what they said. You know, that's a kind of sleight of hand. They may get CIA paychecks, some get pensions, but they're not employees. Then they said, and it's right down here, in light of these provisions and in view of the fine cooperation the Drug Enforcement Administration has received from CIA, no formal requirement regarding the reporting of narcotics violations has been included in these procedures. Let me let that sink in for a minute. The Attorney General has just notified the head of the CIA that he no longer has to tell the Department of Justice when his people are dealing drugs. There it is in black and white. Proof of a conspiracy. Right there. By the way, do you know who negotiated this memorandum for William French Smith? Ken Starr.